I'm going to a town that has already been burnt down. I'm going to a place that has already been disgraced. I'm going to see some folks who have already been let down. I'm so tired of America. I'm gonna make it up for all of the Sunday times. I'm gonna make it up for all of the nursery rhymes. They never really seem to want to tell the truth. I'm so tired of you, America, making my own way home. Ain't gonna be alone. I've got a life to live, America. I've got a life to live. Tell me, do you really think you go to hell for having love? Tell me enough to forget everything that you've done is good. I really need to know, after soaking the body of Jesus Christ in blood, I'm so tired of you, America. Took advantage of a world that loved you well. I'm going to a town that has already been burnt down. I'm so tired of you, America. Making my own way home. But I won't be alone,
be alone.
No, I've got a lie to live, America. I've got a life to live. I've got a soul.
We all have a life to live, my friends. I have been working on a number of things over the last few days. As you know, I've not been live the last 2 days. This is the last day of August. Tomorrow begins again. Jeff Bennett here, The Edge of Darkness. As I continue to work on this, for me, new computer, which has been a royal pain in the rear end, among many things I've had going on all week, I'd had a request from my doctor friend in Indiana for one of George Michael's songs. It just blows his family's mind. And I sent it over to him. And I began listening to George Michael music as I worked on the computer on and off all day today. And it just amazes me. This man is gone. Such a bloody talent, mellow voice, just unreal. And I need those mellow voices sometimes. As I look at and study and continue to read and see what in the living daylights is going on in this country and around the world, I want to vomit. Amongst those things are socialism. Now, we think in terms of socialism as it comes to Russia, but we're facing our own degrees of socialism in this nation today. And one is to understand that socialism in many varied forms is presented to us as the panacea for all the world's problems, where in actuality, it's the solution for none of them. and a major contributor to most of them. But the socialists hope that you never figure that out. Because if you did, you might be tempted to repudiate socialism, which they want you to embrace. Now, there's a major component of socialism in this country. It is the public school system. Those who may have read Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto would recall that number 10 of the list of planks that Marx listed as part of his agenda for taking over a country was free education for all children in public, albeit government schools. Now, admittedly, the content of the manifesto was not original with Marx. He was hired to write the manifesto for the League of the Just, the so-called Illuminati. So you can probably figure the 10 points that Marx listed in the manifesto were Illuminist goals. But the socialist intent of public schools in this country is not limited to Marx, but Horace Mann and the Unitarians, as well as socialist Robert Owen of New Harmony, Indiana fame. They were all strong persuaders of and adherents to the concept of state-run schools, a.k.a. government schools. Now, to properly educate or indoctrinate generations of students as part of one's agenda, you had to force compulsory school attendance on them and their descendants so that no one would believe it had ever been otherwise. And they did that in the South. Interestingly enough, after the War of Northern Aggression, something that some of you still call the Civil War, which I think is hilarious because there's no war that's civil. But that's a side issue. When the Southern states were brought back into the Union, the one Lincoln claimed they would never had never been out of, they had to adopt new constitutions. And one of the provisions in those new constitutions was that every Southern state would henceforth have a state-run public school system, a government school system. But the South had never had that until Reconstruction, but they damn sure do now. One more reason that we stress that Reconstruction is somewhat ongoing, is it not? Of course, the northern states, starting with Massachusetts and spreading to the middle Atlantic and then the midwestern states, have had government schools since the 1830s. Oh, they never bother to tell you that those government schools were started as a reaction to the church schools of that era. And that being the case, the supporters of government-controlled education are the real reactionaries that they accuse the rest of us of being, because we don't want their socialist doctrine shoved down our throats. And that's why their education agenda is so damn compulsory. They don't want people to be able to resist. They want to force us to comply. Like the Yankee soldier told the ex-slave, basically, you're free to do what you want. What we want you to do, but do not what you might choose to do on your own. Does that not make us all slaves? Well, as my friend says, thankfully in our day, some parents are beginning to find ways around the government's compulsory education agenda through homeschooling and church and other private schools whose founders have a vision for something other than Karl Marx's free education for all children in public schools. And some have finally begun to realize that Marx lied to them, because with what they pay in property taxes, one can hardly call the public schools free. And besides, what's going on in many public schools today can only in the wildest of imaginations be classified as education. Many public schools spend more time promoting the transsexual agenda and teaching that being born white makes you inherently racist, while those of all other races never have that problem, and they so cannot possibly be racist. Teaching the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic? Oh, no, that's now racist. math is racist. And so the public school system is in the process of educating an entire generation of brilliant buffoons. Idiots. And these kids are in the process of asking all the wrong questions and getting lies back for answers. And they're so well educated that they cannot tell the difference. All they have to do is make sure they change into the right clothes from the trans closets at school so that their parents won't know what sex they really are. Well, my friends, this is not an indictment of everyone who works or has worked in public schools, but it's an indictment of that system and the socialist values that spawned it. Values this country could have done better without. Socialism is indeed compulsion. And it and its minions will ever continue to look for ways to compel us and our children to comply. We need to practice cultural secession. And part of that cultural secession is taking our kids out of the public fool system. Commentary, my friend Al Benson Jr. Al has gone through a lot of health issues the last couple of years. He and his wife are, I believe, now living in a home. He's working with a small, I think, an older laptop computer that gives him a lot of grief. But he still manages to crank out one or two brand new articles every single day. More and more of them I publish. What we've just shared with you is entitled Socialism is Compulsion. You can find it on federalobserver.com. Now, having said that, I just published a new piece earlier today from Al Benson. That particular piece I just shared with you is several days old. But then you see his words are never particularly old. His latest article, which you'll find on metropolis.cafe, is called Exercises in Futility. It approaches some of the same issues from a different aspect. Worth your taking some time. I sit there looking at what's going on in this nation. I looked at a series of headlines today, the first time I've really done it in a number of days because of the battles I've been fighting for this past week. The truth is, there's something terribly, terribly wrong in this country. Isn't there? Truman Verdun stated that good faith people are willing to be corrected because the truth is important. Not so the liars, of course. They know they are wrong, or the ideologues. And so the ideologues, therefore, don't act in good faith, though they think they do. Of all the vicious lies spun around the COVID-19 operation, interesting choice of words, is it not? Among the most damaging was the campaign to demonize a product called ivermectin, a Nobel Prize-winning true wonder drug. Among the safest known pharmaceuticals ever, effective against disease-causing parasites, also a potent antiviral agent, which was exactly why the CDC and the FDA turned on it. It very effectively subdued COVID-19 infections. Why do we bring up COVID again? Because our government has come up with new variations thereof. And they want to very quickly demand that we all take the jab. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. And so what they did effectively subdued COVID-19 infections. In other words, it worked. Ivermectin worked. And because of that, these agencies had to pretend that it was worthless and harmful to protect the emergency use authorization, or EUA, for the fabulous mRNA vaccines that didn't work and ended up harming, disabling, and killing many people. Any treatment that proved effective would have invalidated the EUA and negated the liability shield that came with the EUA, protecting the vaccine manufacturers from lawsuits. Just a couple of short weeks ago, in a lawsuit brought by three doctors against the FDA for its COVID-19 restrictions, Department of Justice lawyer Ashley Honnold told the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit in Louisiana that, quote, FDA explicitly recognizes that doctors do have the authority to prescribe ivermectin to treat COVID. Really? After 3 years of bad-mouthing the drug in public service announcement, horse and cow dewormer not for humans, and telling national boards of physicians not to use it, and they told the National Organization of Pharmacists not to fill prescriptions for it, and all of that resulted in many states officially forbidding its use, which led to gross injustices such as the state of Maine medical board's obtuse and insane persecution of biowarfare expert and epidemiologist Dr. Merrill Nass. And by the way, Dr. Nass is now suing them. And all of this was done to many other state boards, revoking the licenses of doctors. Days after that holler by the Department of Justice lawyer Honnold, the FDI honchos in D.C. walked back what she told the court, saying it is not authorized or approved ivermectin for use in preventing or treating COVID-19, nor has the agency stated that it is safe nor effective for that use, end of quote. Well, the agency then invoked its battery of fake excuses for that ruling, but the studies were inconclusive and blah, 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 which is just a bunch more bullshit. I mean, you understand, because the bottom line is the same as ever. The FDA will not surrender the EUA and its various protections for the COVID vaccines, and it will employ any official lie to support that position. But it also happened that going back to the 2019 debut of COVID-19, one Dr. Anthony Fauci, then head of the NIAID, and Francis Collins, then head of the NIH, two related agencies that funded and supported coronavirus gain-of-function research in the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Oh, they received many millions of dollars in royalties for their part in developing mRNA vaccines against the COVID-19 pathogen. But they had priorly developed. Total dollar figure rumored to be above $300 million. You see how all that works? If you're among that segment of the population that has not lost its mind, you might realize that the public health authorities have no authority. They lied outrageously about everything connected with COVID-19. And when they were caught lying, they just lied some more in the vain attempt to cover up their previous lies. And so it would be foolish to regard anything they say from now on without a complete house cleaning of agency personnel, plus some earnest prosecutions, as worth listening to and following. Of course, the other option is make damn sure that every one of those people takes the jab themselves in public. I mean, there's always the noose, but I'd like to see him take the jab first. But keep in mind and understand what authority is. Authority is granted only to those who are trustworthy, and yet it's really that simple. If an authority lies about everything and is caught doing so, then it's rendered invalid. And now it happens that the U.S. public health agencies, huge and costly as they are, make up only one part of the even larger and costlier U.S. government. which has been busy surrendering the authority of all its other parts for years now, to the point that the whole enterprise has become untrustworthy and in need of a severe house cleaning. Traditionally, elections are the mechanism for cleaning that house, but our elections have lost their authority too, haven't they? How so? Because the untrustworthy officials in charge of them employ dubious systems for gathering the vote. Mail-in balloting that invites fraud and hackable vote counting machines that are connected to the internet. The defects of these things are, my friends, so obvious that they can hardly be ignored. And the remedy is obvious and simple, too. Paper ballots hand-counted in small precincts of manageable size, all done on one day, which we call Election Day, and which should be a national holiday so more working people can get to the polls. But somehow, though, we are unable to avail that remedy. Probably because the untrustworthy people in charge would lose their jobs and the power they enjoy in a truly fair election. And so they conclude, let's not have that. Look, our new governor in Arizona, who took office, I don't know, 5-6 months ago, whatever it was, she was the, Secretary of State of Arizona? Something like that. And when she chose to run for governor, she was not forced to step down, which meant that she had an awful lot of control over what was taking place on Election Day. And surprise, surprise, she got elected. But you see, that didn't just happen in Arizona. Other things are happening elsewhere. It's even looking like the untrustworthy public health authorities are ramping up a new, fresh COVID-19 scare for this fall in order to reinforce the special mail-in voting scheme that's working so nicely for them. They want to disorder the minds of the public so they'll be too frightened to notice that all the other parts of government are failing in virtually all their duties to the people of this land. Come on, man. Bring on some new COVID variants and the lovely new booster vax that have worked so well. Not. Go ahead. We should say, I dare you. We won't be fooled again. Commentary, James Howard Kunstler, for his politely said Cluster F Nation. Yeah, there's something terribly wrong with this country, isn't there? It's appalling what we're dealing with, my friends. Before we go into the next segment of this program, next Tuesday, which I believe will be the 5th of September. September. It's a rough month for me. Next Tuesday, during this hour, we're going to be doing a somewhat unusual economic program. It's an extremely interesting piece of history. It's something I came across with this change-up of the computers. My old computer is not that old. It was still doing its job. Little issues, little problems that kept driving me crazy. But I was made an offer to replace it with a model that is 4 or 5 years and or versions newer. I use a Mac for my main work, although I've got a couple of old HP and Toshiba laptops sitting in my office as well. But I got a fair price on this new unit, which has been completely restored. updated per se. And of course, they went to transfer stuff off my old computer, and the guy did not do a thorough job, and it cost me a frickin' arm and a leg to get their master guy over here 3 different times. I've still got some minor issues, but we can handle them on the phone. And I came across this piece that I'd written many years ago. It's a piece that I had sent out to many of our precious metals clients. And I had a coworker at that time by the name of Robbie Noel. And many of you will remember Robbie. I think of him often. I miss him madly. Guy I began working with back in 1995. But I don't want to get into this now. I want you to plan on joining us Tuesday, September the 5th, for this very special segment and portion of the program. It is an amazing story, but it's got some very interesting things for you to think about. I spent two and a half hours working on that piece last night because obviously there were some things I had to update in it and few changes of a few words, because at the time that I wrote it, Robbie was still alive and we were still working together. So do join us Tuesday, September the 5th, for this very, very special program. Don't miss. I have a quick favor, Michael, if you're with us, because I need to go down the hallway for a moment. Is there a chance I can have a quick dance with Kim? I haven't been able to do that this week. Sounds like he's not there. Ah, hey, 1 second. That's cool. I'm going to run down the hallway, take care of business. Believe me, I can hear the music. So I'm going to have a quick dance with Kim, and you stick around. I'll be right back. At the age of 75 and a half plus, I have been an ardent reader most of my life. First grade, Mrs. King, second grade, a nice Jewish abroad who I can't remember his name. Mrs. Otis in the third grade. Damn, she was hot. Third grade, I knew this woman was hot. I can still see her. Yeah, I got pictures of them. Fourth grade, the two lesbian gals who were the first I met. Fifth grade, Donald Adair. The man who has had such an influence on me that I dedicated our website, metropolis.cafe, to him and his memory. But I've been an avid reader of history, of novels, many novels of which were based on truth and reality. A book that I read as a relatively young individual by Charles Dickens, the original guy, The Old Curiosity Shop. Interesting enough, there is a building so labeled in Great Britain that still carries that name with Dickens' name on it. Well, but the thing that becomes interesting is that things never change in this world. Not as much as we would like. Or maybe in some respects too much. Talking some weeks ago with my friend Charles Dickens, my local blues musician. He wrote a new piece. And he pays me a degree of honor in the first sentence when he said, Bennett just floated another title balloon over the virtual fence. And this will be the fourth in the series. He says, oh, God, then just when I thought it was safe to go back into the water, another idea comes floating in. I'll save that one for installment number 5. Charles John Huffman Dickens wrote about the inequities and inequalities of 19th century England. His stories provided a glimpse of life's concerns and issues in those times through his masterfully created characters and their stories in those situations. He wrote what he saw around him, taking his readers on a journey of enlightenment and allowing them to experience their trials and tribulations through his prose, while illuminating things most people never saw or simply chose to ignore. In 1841, Charles Dickens' Old Curiosity Shop was the story of an old man with a disquieting secret, his gambling addiction, which created uncomfortable encumbrances, causing him no end of problems. Is it gambling or the obsession that drives the story of the ensuing life situations that it makes? And this is something you, the listener, must decide. Oh, we're not going to bore you with the story's details because the paragraphs that we've just shared with you have set the tone for this commentary. Now, but as usual, Charles, my friend, strongly recommends that you investigate this story independently because the parallels will help this commentary and this program make more sense to you. Who knows, you might even take away some valuable insights as well. So let's get right to the point while literary license is still in full vigor. My friend Charles chose this title because Dickens' story speaks to him and the parallels that he sees in our times. Tends to kindle one's curiosity. In today's world, the old curiosity crop is a collection of people who wonder, investigate, reason, and think critically. That's a trait missing from most of America. And Charles's title plays on the definition of curiosity, inquisitive interests leading to inquiry. Now the old part should be self-evident. I see that thinking is no longer required. People regress to Pavlovian responses, being conditioned to react without thought. But Charles proposes that addictions and preoccupations are issues in modern times, but they're all a continuation from antiquity. The obsession with power is arguably the oldest mania chronicled. It's ruined every country, every nation, every republic on this planet from the very beginning. And it will all continue until we completely destroy this planet and everything on it just to feed our greed or learn to channel our energies toward more productive pursuits. My money is on complete destruction. Humankind considers itself the preeminent life form on the third rock from the sun. Ha ha ha. We judge ourselves as highly intelligent. We show the capacity for marvelous inventions, and yet we forego our opportunity to learn from our history, dooming ourselves to repeat it. I'd like to share a revelation I've had during my time here. It came to me when I tried to classify your species. I realized that you're not actually mammals. Every mammal on this planet instinctively develops a natural equilibrium with their surrounding environment. But you humans do not. You move to another area. You multiply. And you multiply until every natural resource is consumed. And the only way you can survive is to spread to another area. There's another organism on this planet that follows the same pattern. Do you know what it is? A virus. Human beings are a disease, a cancer of this planet. You are a plague. And we are the cure. No, those are not Charles's words, and they're not mine. They are words from Agent Smith from the film The Matrix. And yet, as much as I've edited and prepared this column for posting, it was not until I just read that commentary, that quote from Agent Smith, it all came together for me. That is, in fact, what we are facing. A disease. Human beings are the cancer of this planet. Not all of us. According to archaeologists, humankind has been on this planet for about 200,000 years. What have we learned? Our preeminent skill is taking from the planet, from one another. We've refined the art of subordination and subjugation and surmounting our opponents, which using the tools we developed for that single purpose. Our focus is on control of each other. It is our addiction. It is our obsession. This is what the politicians have done. Controlling us. It is their addiction, their obsession. And we've fallen for it. How many more wars must we fight before we realize that it is simply the means to an end? And that end being the acquisition of money and power. And since money equals power, I'll just use power. How many times will we repeat these behaviors before we learn anything? My guess is that it's ad infinitum and ad nauseum. we haven't changed in millennia. Why should we start now? It's served us from the very beginning. But I submit to you that it's beginning to fail us. Unfortunately, only a few from the old curiosity crop recognize it. Man's quest, my friends, is ultimately for power. And we will do whatever is necessary to acquire it, because, as Machiavelli told us, the end justifies the means. We want it, and will ruin anyone or anything that stands in the way. Wow. Addiction. Obsession. And to this end, we've learned the art of the, I'll politely say, grin screw. The ability to smile while we lie and cheat and steal and betray and murder to achieve our goal. Power! And speaking of grin screw, we endure career politicians, some of whom, most of them, aligned with Big Brother decades ago, some for over 50 years, and too many are approaching that number. There are some that are in their 90s in D.C., lording over us. That's an age that too many people are approaching. And yet we ignore their lunatic and senile ramblings, excusing it as old age and castigating anyone who dares to mention it as ageist. We've got an accusatory name for everything we don't like, but fail to find it in ourselves. There is an expected gain of wisdom as we age, my friends, and yet for some, with that age comes an increased reliance on habit. Those things that worked so well in the past, that familiar arrow in the quiver that always seemed to find its mark. It's a common tactic for the corrupt career politicians, or CCP. Mankind calls any assembly of mechanisms that perform a repetitive task a machine. It is the basis for the term political machine. These political machines crank out politicians from an ideological mold which was cast decades ago and modified only slightly to suit modern times. But the only changes are superficial and illusionary, varying very little from the original. You see, a political party comprises individuals who organize to win elections and to operate governments and influence public policy. Did you notice the conspicuous absence of doing anything for the public in general? I mean, other than influencing public policy. So the obvious question that one must ask is, who do they serve? The answer is self-evident. They serve the party, of course. The Democrat and Republican parties are the primary parties in Congress. The Democrats are the party of Jim Crow, the KKK, apartheid, segregation, bigger government, American Civil War, democratic socialism. It's one hell of a resume. The Republicans are the party of conservative values, economic freedom, extensive regulation of the economy, government-funded social programs, and affirmative action. Another stellar legacy. Of course, then there's Bernie's party, the so-called independents. They vote for candidates on issues rather than on a political ideology or partisanship. A voter who does not have long-standing loyalty to or identification with a political party. A voter who does not usually vote for the same political party. Some call independents the undecided or noncommittal. Again, one must ask, did you notice the conspicuous absence of doing something, anything, for the people or the republic? Why do they want to control the government and everyone's lives? Think about it for a while. Voters fall into one of three main categories. 38% are independent, 31% Democrat, 26% Republican. Did you pay attention in math class? That's 95%, which leaves 5% for those with a pension for one of the 418 other ideologies. Or was that idiotologies? I apologize to you, Charles. Naturally, some parties blend doctrines. There's the Democrat Socialists, the super-duper, ultra-uber-MAGA Republicans. But they represent a relatively small part of their primary party affiliation. It's all a matter of perspective and point of views. If you don't see the similarities, they're all proponents of partisan control. That's the chief function of political parties, to win elections, operate the government, influence public policy, and, oh, I forgot item number four, make sure that they're lining their pockets with others who are supporting what it is they're trying to get done. But a government, on the other hand, by definition, should provide the parameters for everyday behavior for its citizens, protect them from outside interference, and if required, provide for their well-being and happiness as circumstances or party affiliations dictate. It extends to everyone in the Republic, even lawmakers and politicians. But the missing element in all of this is adherence to the Constitution and the service of the citizens. I suppose that's implied. But I fail to find any reference to pandering to the donor base or selling influence. But that would be illegal against the Constitution, right? None of them would ever, ever break the law unless they could amend or simply ignore it without consequence. Because that's where the political ideology enters the discussion. Our Constitution signifies that no one is above the law. But because governments are our invention, they're prone to our frailties, our idiosyncrasies, our peccadilloes. They are as corrupt as we are because they are us. We are the government, or at least we used to be. Then there's their favorite idiom from Machiavelli. The end justifies the means. And we accept the application of Machiavelli's gambit even when the implied benefits are unrequited. These definitions, my friends, are from a civics textbook used in the olden days. It's how it used to be. It's from the old curiosity crop, people like me. We learned how to think, to reason, to develop personal views and ideas based on facts, not the latest pabulum from the mainstream media mafia or Big Brother. Keep the words of Mark Twain in mind. I'm not one of those who, in expressing opinions, confine themselves to facts. Another comment from Twain was, never argue with stupid people because they'll drag you down to their level and they'll beat you with their experience. Remember, Twain was a political satirist. And so the old curiosity crop remembers how it was intended to be. Still, the new world order has a much different use for government, courtesy of a splinter group from the CCP. Oh no, there's successful corruption of the administration and the adulterations of our Constitution vests them total control based on their purported experience and wisdom. They mechanized and weaponized the process to wrest and institutionalize their power. The result? Secured control by eliminating any possible avenues to challenge it. And so, my friends, they've waited, or they've walled themselves off in the D.C. swamp and assimilated two of the three governmental branches as their enforcers. And the next target is the U.S. Supreme Court. Oh, they've already begun their FUD campaign on that one. Recall the concept of fear, uncertainty, and doubt from a past post. Fear, uncertainty, and doubt, often shortened to FUD, are manipulative propaganda tactics used in sales and marketing, public relations, politics, polling, cults. FUD is generally a strategy to influence perception, by disseminating negative and dubious information in his manifestation that appeals to fear. Those demosoc insurrectionists have effectively divided the republic. Now they enthrone themselves in their new world order. It's what we experience today with their eradicating our First and Second Amendment rights. George Carlin once expressed those in one of his routines when he said in 1942 there were 110,000 Japanese American citizens in good standing, law-abiding people who were thrown into internet camps simply because their parents were born in the wrong country. That's all they did wrong. But they had no right to a lawyer, no right to a fair trial, no right to a jury of their peers, and no right to due process of any kind. The only right they had was right this way, into the internment camps. And just when these American citizens needed their rights the most, their government took them away. And rights aren't rights if someone can take them away. They're privileges. You see, that's all we've ever had in this country, is a bill of temporary privileges. And if you read the news, even badly, and listen to this program and this network, you know the list gets shorter and shorter and shorter, my friends. And regardless of your feelings for Trump, the current legal bullshit of over 90 counts and 4 indictments is a testament to this very statement. They want to prevent him from running for president or possibly winging, so they will use their legal chicaneries in legerdemain, in the FUD, to prevent it by assassinating his character, by damning him in the public eye. And they cannot convict him, and so they'll bankrupt him with legal fees, and so far they've exceeded $14 million. It could easily double. Oop. Go back and consider the paragraph that we share with you by Carlin. Is it accurate, or is it true? If they can take anything away, it's not a right. For when all the guns have been banned, when all the words have been censored, and when all the history has been erased, and when all the freedom has been taken, only then will you discover why our right to bear arms was so high on their list. Quote, the National Rifle Association. And that, my friends, that very quotation represents the old curiosity crop. Charles R. Dickens, August 31st, 2023. Yes. All that we've shared with you today has been published, federalobserver.com. It is well worth grabbing those articles, the old curiosity crop. Socialism is compulsion. And wake up, people. We won't be fooled again. Forward them on to as many people as you possibly can. By the way, we will be taking off on Monday for Labor Day. Maggie's tuning in right now. She's been trying to call me. She forgot I'm on the air. My friends, thank you for being patient with me this week. Thanks for being with me tonight. Take care of yourself. I will see you next Tuesday. Maggie will be with you tomorrow. Time for me to go. I'm praying for time. I hope you are as well. Without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett. This is the year of the hungry man. Whose place is in the past, hand in hand with ignorance and legitimate excuses. The rich declare themselves poor, and most of us are not sure
If we have it too much, but we're taking our chances, say. I sang 20 years and a day, but nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flame. It's hard to love, there's so much to hate. Hanging on to hope, when there's no hope to speak out. In the wounded skies above, say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time. Charity, charity is the coat you wear twice a year, yeah. This is the year of the guilty man. Your television takes a stand, and you find that what was over there is over here. So you scream from behind your door, say what's mine is mine and not yours. I may have too much, but I'll take my chances, say. I sang it 20 years and a day, 'cause nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flames. It's hard to love, Jesus has so much to hate. Hanging on to hope, there is no hope to speak out. In the wounded skies above, say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.